Session number 12778.
Martin really loved.
During March, April, our work was confined principally to reconnaissance of the area round about our camp. And I was lucky enough then to be sent on detachment to a police station manned by the Palestine police on top of a hill called Shafa Armour. It was only about 3 or 4 miles away from the main camp, battalion camp at Jalama, but it was a real little hilltop fort surrounded by a barbed wire and possessing its own very own searchlight on the roof. And I had with me a detachment of the Palestine police commanded by a British company sergeant major. And this was really tremendous fun, having one's own personal fort and with one's own personal searchlight, which one could turn on whenever one wanted to, and being away from battalion headquarters, which was the, of course, aim of every company commander. Incidents began to multiply. Roads were mined every night by Jewish terrorists. Railway lines blown up. Camps were mortared. And soldiers abducted and killed. And we worked on the basis in my own battalion that if you were obviously thoroughly alert at all times and no sensible terrorists would take the chance of attacking you. And we ourselves, in fact, never got attacked. But it was constantly going on. The main Jewish organizations using arms were, first of all, the Stern Gang, originated by a gentleman called Abraham Stern, who had been himself killed by security forces before our arrival. They were murderers and assassins generally. Another bunch of murderers and assassins called the Jürgen Zwei Leume, run by a chap called Menachem Begin, later to become Prime Minister of Israel. And the Palmach, which were the active service units of the Haganah or Home Guard. And all three were targets for the security forces. The Commander-in-Chief Palestine, by June 1946, was General Sir Evelyn Barker, better known as Bubbles Barker, who was an old friend of my mother's. I had referred to him in letters home from Normandy in 1944, when he was commanding 49 Division. One thing which he had done in 49 Division, which had the mascot of, or not mascot, the insignia of a polar bear as its crest, was to raise the polar bear's head from looking down at the ground to looking upwards, as making a more aggressive impression. And I suppose I had my own ideas what Bubbles Barker might be like. I imagined a rather red-faced, aggressive sort of person. I was to meet him in Palestine and was very favourably impressed. At any rate, in June 46, he decided that he could no longer sit quietly by while the British government and the United Nations argued about the future of Palestine and while all these nonsenses were going on. And he therefore launched Operation Agatha at the end of June 1946. And his plan was for the simultaneous search of as many Jewish towns and settlements as possible, and then the screening of the male population of all those towns and settlements for men on the government's wanted list. And to the 2nd Battalion, the Cheshire Regiment, which I'm still with, was given the task of the search of one of these settlements called Meshek Yagur. Meshek Yagur was a large agricultural settlement a few miles south of the main port of Haifa, where the lower slopes of Mount Carmel meet the plain of Esdra Elon, bounded on three sides by the mountain and on the fourth by the main road from Haifa to Nazareth and Jerusalem. It had originally been a small hutted camp, but had been expanded between the wars by the erection of modern concrete two-story buildings, and it now housed about 3,000 people, of whom 500 were children, who were looked after in three of the blocks by nannies and nurses, so that their parents were free to work in the fields. And then there was a large communal dining hall. At the south end of the settlement were the cow sheds and a garage for the repair of tractors and farm machinery. And standing up above everything else was a water tower. And the whole settlement was surrounded by a high wire fence, with the only entrance through double iron gates leading from the main road. Now, Bubbles Barker had decided that Operation Agatha should start at 3:30 a.m. on Sunday the 29th of June, 1946, when all the men were likely to be at home and asleep. The Cheshire Regiment set off on foot from its camp at Jalama and moved very slowly and quietly around the foot of the Mount Carmel to surround the settlement on three sides. My company, which was the 4th Company, came in from Shafarama in our Ben Gun carriers, arriving outside the main gates at exactly 3:30 a.m. So the settlement was now surrounded and no one could get out. And the plan was now for the Palestine police to assemble all the men of the settlement, march them to barbed wire cages, which were now being set up by the King Shropshire Light Infantry outside the camp. And in these cages, everyone would be interrogated and screened to see whether they belonged to the Stern Gang, Jürgens von Loimy, or Palmach. At 3:30 a.m., I think it was Superintendent Campbell of the Palestine Police, rang the bell at the main gate, which was padlocked. And when the watchmen appeared, as they soon did, they were told to summon the Mukhtar, or headman of Meshek Yagur. Well, he took his time arriving, and he got there 20 minutes later, unshaven, dishevelled, and obviously very angry. And after listening to Superintendent Campbell, he refused to open the gates until he had consulted the elders of the settlement, and he told he must be back in 30 minutes. Well, already lights were coming on in the buildings all over the settlement, and angry-looking men and women were coming to the wire fence to see what was happening. And then suddenly a great beacon fire blazed into flame on top of the water tower, a signal to neighbouring settlements that help was urgently required. But of course the other settlements were also under siege. By 5 a.m., and now broad daylight, the headman still refused to open the gates, and the order was given for them to be broken down. So I got my men to attach a tow rope to the gates and then pull them open with a machine gun carrier and then moved inside. And at the same time, the other companies round about came through the barbed wire, so they formed a closer cordon inside. At first, I tried in a friendly way to persuade the women who were blocking the way inside the gate to move apart, and said that they had nothing to fear if they kept shouting that there were no bad men in Meshkagar, then that could easily be checked and there would be no further problem. But the women, in fact, formed an absolutely solid wall together with their children with linked arms, and we couldn't get past them, or not readily. And that situation went on for about 3 hours. We tried everything. First of all, as I say, by argument, next by just pushing them. But as soon as the soldiers made contact with women, they were set upon and attempts made to wrestle their rifles away from them. So next I tried driving our machine gun carriers straight at them. And they immediately opened their ranks to let the carriers through and then quickly closed them again. So that wasn't any good. And all the time they were keeping up a constant storm of abuse, telling the soldiers that they were worse than Hitler, worse than the SS, worse than the Gestapo. And my soldiers, who had recently been engaged in the battle against Hitler, find this a bit hard to bear. So I then took the decision to use gas. This also failed, partly because the wind was blowing in the wrong direction, but more particularly because the women and children had a complete organization already in hand, so that as a gas grenade landed, it was covered with a wet sandbag by a child, and then a woman scooped it up and doused it in a bucket of water. And they had these buckets, shovels, sandbags all ready for use if this in fact happened. Well, about this time, the acting brigadier came along and said, "What's happening? Why are you being so slow?" and so on. So I explained the situation to him, and he said, "Shoot him! Shoot him!" Well, I didn't think that was terribly good advice yet, anyhow. But at that moment, the KSLI, who were doing these cages for the prisoners we hope to be screening, came up with two WASP flamethrowers mounted on Bren gun carriers. But these flamethrowers, instead of having flame fuel in, had been filled with crude oil from oil changes on vehicles. So they were absolutely full, and their guns of thick, viscous, dirty black oil. So I addressed the women, and I said that if they did not move out of the way, that we would open fire with these WASP flamethrowers. And they all said, "Ha ha ha ha," knowing perfectly well we would not. And I can remember them now quite clearly. One woman in particular in a white cotton dress with big red flowers on it, who was absolutely slap in the centre of of the target area. And so I gave the order to fire, and out shot this solid jet of thick black crude oil, and it struck the women on their hairs and faces and gay cotton frocks, and there was an instant of absolute stunned silence, and then they just turned and ran. And they ran to the communal dining hall, which is where all the men, in the meantime, had gathered under the protection of the women folk. And, of course, no one would come out of the dining hall. So we then had to use gas grenades to persuade them to leave the dining hall, which they duly did. And the Palestine police then took over, and all the men were escorted to cages for screening, and the women were all told to go back to their houses and stay there. And that looked as if it was going to be the end of the operation. But having got the last of the men into the cages, the commanding officer then sent a message over the radio to us, saying, before we leave, I want everybody to have a quick look round to see if there are any sign of arms in this settlement. And we were given sectors to look at. And my driver spotted a pile of stones with something sticking out and had a look at it. And this was just a pile of illegal leaflets, which they had had ready to issue and just stashed under the stones. But I reported over the radio that everyone should look carefully at piles of stones to see if there was anything. But within a few moments, soldier in another company was walking down at the dried up bed of a little river inside the settlement, and he noticed that a stone, one of the stones in the retaining wall, was quite a different shape to all the rest. It was square, whereas all the rest were roundish. So he pulled it out and found behind it a tunnel. And this tunnel, which he crawled down, led into the cellar of a house. Inside, in the cellar, were 30 rifles. So the news came whistling round, and the next thing we heard over the radio was the battalion will remain in Meshet-Gilgal till further notice, searching for arms. Well, the next 24 hours, we spent the time looking with mine detectors, and we found buried oil drums containing an absolute stack full of grenades and ammunition. And we found the odd gun tucked away in the rafters of houses and so on, but nothing all that exciting. And then the following day, one of our drivers, a driver and radio operator, Private Bevan, who had a good mechanical knowledge and an inquiring mind, was in the garage of the settlement, and he'd been given the job of searching it. And he was particularly interested in what appeared to be a compressed air machine bolted to the floor of the garage. And hanging on the wall behind the machine was a starting handle. And to his surprise, he found that the starting handle was too small to fit over the starter dog. So he thought that was very peculiar, and he mucked around the starter dog with a sort of cog on the engine, and it came away in his hand, leaving a smaller starter dog still in position. He then found that the starting handle would fit the inner starter dog, and he started to wind to try and get the engine going. But the engine didn't get going, but there was suddenly a loud rumbling noise behind him. and he looked round to see that there was a square hole had appeared in the floor of the garage. And he went across to it. The rumble had been the trap door, concrete trap door, rolling away on a railway line underneath the floor of the garage. And going inside, down below the trap door, there was a wooden ladder. And going down there, there was an enormous cellar in which there were evidently filled with rifles, mortars, grenades, and belts of machine gun ammunition. We all had, of course, went to have a look at this, because it was quite the biggest find ever made in Palestine up to that date. And if there was one hide like this in the settlement, the chances are there were more. And we tried to, by examining this particular one, to see whether there was anything which could give us a clue to other hides. And we discovered that the compressed air machine was in fact to ventilate the cellar. And there was a ventilation pipe leading up from the cellar, which looked like the exhaust pipe for the machine, but was actually a ventilation pipe leading down to the cellar. And so the word went out to look for anything which looked like a ventilation pipe around the building. And during the next 2 days, we found another half dozen secret rooms, all as a result of the clue of the ventilation pipes. For example, one house I found myself, it had a clothesline outside supported on two metal pipes. And so I got my Batman driver onto my shoulders, and I got him to drop some pebbles down the ventilation shaft. And one could hear, way down the bowels of the earth, the thing striking concrete. So we searched and searched, and we eventually found the entrance was under the scraper grill outside the front door of the nearby house. And that again had a disappearing concrete slab, and down below were rifles. The children's playground contained a metal maypole and a seesaw suspended on metal tubing. And these turned out to be the ventilation shafts for an underground explosive store, the entrance to which was through a trapdoor in the floor of the tool shed, all covered up in sacking. And so there were more of these ventilation type hides. The next lot we found were, again, with the aid of mine detectors. In the cow shed there was a very fierce bull in a pan of steel tubing, so we were thought of steel tubing and ventilation. We got rid of the bull and examined the floor of the pen with a mine detector, and we discovered that there was metal there, and this was a metal band holding four large tiles on the floor together, and these tiles were the trap door leading to a cellar of ammunition underneath the bull's pen. And the cellar was ventilated by the tubular metal supports around the bull. So now we started looking for trap doors made out of tiles bound by metal bands. And almost all of the modern houses in the settlement had them. The attendants at the children's nursery, where the children were having their lunch, dear innocent little things, were absolutely furious when soldiers entered the house to search. But in fact, underneath the dining room table, there was a trap door, the metal band trap door, leading down to a false room between two houses, false partition between two houses. And were ringed with rifle racks down below. Then we found in the dining hall the backs of all the store cupboards in which all the food was, all these sort of groceries were stacked in. The backs of the cupboards were revolved, and there were hideouts for ammunition and guns behind them. The fire hydrants came out, if you knew how to do it, concealing guns. The duty roaster for milkmen on the wall of the cowshed swiveled to disclose behind it a complete list of every member of the Palmach in Misha Kagura. And even the windowsills of the houses were designed to slide out, to pull out so that rifles could be hidden in the purpose-built recesses below them. Well, it was absolutely fascinating. It was real sort of Edgar Wallace type detection work. And before very long, General Sir Richard Gale, who was our divisional commander, Windy Gale, came down to have a look. And he ordered every unit in the division to send parties to come and have a look. The world's press arrived on block and spent hours going round. Before the search was called off after 10 days, we had had over 8,000 visitors. And General Bubbles Parker arrived down, and I met him for the first time. A delightful person, couldn't have been nicer or more unassuming and modest and less like the sort of fiery proverbial general I had imagined him to be. And he invited me to go up and stay with him in Jerusalem. Now, Windy Gale, the interesting thing about this is that he didn't come near Misha Kagura until after we had made our finds. And I took him round, and I took him first of all to this garage to explain all about the compressed air machine and how that all happened. Recently I read a book by Nicholas Bethel called Palestine Triangle, in which there's an account by General Sir Richard Nelson Gale of how he went to this settlement called Misha Kagura, which has been searched by the soldiers, who were having no luck at all. And so he said to them, "Why don't you look underneath the floor of the garage?"